I want to say at the outset that my words this morning come out of dwelling in the reading from Baruch rather than the gospel. It is all gospel, of course. So if you are somebody who follows along, you might want to keep your finger in that part of the bulletin rather than the John reading or the Luke reading. Like many of you, my thoughts were going in a certain direction this week. And then the shootings in San Bernardino happened. And my thoughts are still muddling their way to clarity. And I'd name that not as an apology or a plea for you to be patient with this sermon, but to name aloud the condition that binds us all as contingent, partial, vulnerable creatures. I spent my early childhood in the 1970s in Toronto in a neighborhood that was then, and I think still to this day, the incarnation of global patterns of economic and political upheaval. You could track hot spots in the world and where people had been able to get out and seek refuge, asylum, political safety, economic often, and made it to Toronto. And when we were there, when I was young, the community was Greeks and Turks and still the older generation of Italians. And toward the end of our time there in the late 70s, it was increasingly peoples coming from Southeast Asia and Latin America. And as I understand it now, if you were to go to my old street, Manning Avenue, it's largely Syrian and Afghan and Pakistani and. It seemed to my 7-8-year-old eyes that all of my neighborhood friends, no matter what language they spoke at home, that their grandmothers all wore the same uniform. They all wore black dresses. We were not of this culture. We only spoke English at home. Actually, my siblings and I were made fun of in our neighborhood. It was a great education, and I mean that quite seriously, because we were hopelessly monolingual, being American expats in Toronto. They all wore black dresses. I asked my mother about it. Well, my mother tried to explain, it's the garb of the grieving. This signals to everybody around them that these women are in a time of mourning. They are possibly, and the more I think about it, quite likely widows, or they've lost children, or grandchildren. And as a child, as, you know, a bright, happy child, not unlike my daughter, who I've discovered loves Christmas music, which we had to listen to in the car for hours yesterday, I thought it odd. Why would you want to go around wearing black all the time, relentlessly, no matter the season, in spring and summer and fall and winter? But the older I have gotten, and when I have gone through periods of my own grief, I've been envious of those in a culture who get to wear a uniform, who get to put something on that communicates for them, tread gently, be kind, don't ask stupid questions. This person is grieving. I made my own attempts at creating such an outfit in 1994, which was the Advent and Christmas season when my mother was unraveling in every sense of the word. And I was getting ready to go up to Long Island, New York from my home in Washington, D.C., and I was going to attempt to create Christmas for my father and my brother because my mother was not able to do that. And I went to a mall, but I armed myself before I went to the mall. I put on my Doc Marten boots, and my very black wardrobe and my headphones, and I listened to Portishead, which might not mean a thing to anybody here, but they were a great band in the 90s. Dark, ambient hip-hop from England. Bristol, to be exact. And I stomped and stormed my way through that mall. I was shielded, largely, from the Christmas music coming from the speakers and the singing Santas at every turn. It was a useful uniform at the mall. It was a useful uniform for a lot of my life because its prickliness and edginess was a really helpful deflection for people who would give really bad advice. Some of it still managed to come through. The kind of things people can say to the grieving that come out of a fear of grief, a fear of shadows, a discomfort with depression, and especially an inability to sit with the angry, those who have been oppressed and trodden on, and increasingly, and I think in wonderfully spirit-driven ways, are out in the streets raising their fists in response. But I needed a word, still in awe with my boots and my headphones and my multifaceted black wardrobe. I needed a word that in the tender compassion of our God, the dawn from on high would break upon us. Clothing is very much at play in this reading from Baruch. The imagination behind the poetry, the people of God depicted as Jerusalem, Jerusalem depicted as a grieving woman, a widow, somebody whose children have been taken off in chains, children who have died. She is bereft, bereaved, cast out, as the people are experiencing in their exile, their temple smashed to bits, their identity smashed to bits. And to her, to them, comes this word, take off the garment of your sorrow and affliction, O Jerusalem. Put on forever the beauty of the glory from God. In the next verse, the New Jerusalem translation I like better. Wrap the cloak of God's saving justice around you. Put the diadem of the Eternal One's glory on your head. For God will show your splendor everywhere under heaven. God will give you evermore the name peace through justice, glory through devotion. This word that comes to this woman, as we can imagine her, to this people, to you, to me, to the people in San Bernardino and Paris and Syria and Mali and. This word is not the voice of that great aunt you maybe had, or in my case, my grandmother, who would send these horrible cards encouraging us to be cheerful because somebody out there had it worse. May she rest in peace. Be thankful for the blessings you have because somebody out there has it worse. This is not this voice from God. This is not a voice that shames you for being sad and scared, even if that which is causing you to be sad and scared casts against the enormity of the fear and sorrow in the world might seem small. This is a voice that bears within it the glory, the justice, the hope, and the joy it promises. This is not the voice of one standing above us in our fumbling ways, arms folded across its chest, waiting for us to summon up the capacity to be joyful and bear light. This is the voice of the one who comes, who dries tears, who will wait for us for as long as it takes us to manage to get ourselves moving again if we've been flattened by depression. The one who comes to us, with us, for us, promising salvation for all. This is the word we get to point to, prepare for, and bear to one another. It is the voice that gives us the power to speak love in the midst of hate. It's the voice that gives us the courage to worry less about saying the right thing for fear will sound stupid, and instead to reach out to the ones who are grieving, bereft, oppressed, angry. The ones in the Black Widow's garb or the stomping boots of rage. This is the peace that comes. It is powerful. Get ready. Amen.